Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the last SmithInc webinar and podcast episode for 2019. If you are joining us live today, you will have the opportunity to ask a question at any time. Just use the Ask a Question function on your GoToWebinar control panel, and that will be answered at the end of the session. If you are viewing the recording or listening to the podcast later and would like to ask a question, you can always contact us at any time at smithinc.com. I'm now going to hand over to Mark Holton, SmithInc Director, to present his session titled Getting the Right Structure and Process to Deliver More Advisory Services in 2020. Over to you, Mark.
Well, thank you, Andrea, and good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the December, the last one in 2019. Where's the year gone, Andrea? Honest to goodness. I'm looking at that photo on screen and thinking a couple of things. Well, I don't look that young anymore. And secondly, how do I get rid of those extra chins on screen? So we're going to do something about that. Come the end of the year, it's a New Year's resolution. We've got to do something about it. But the reason I wanted to work through this session with you guys today is that I'm getting more and more inquiries from accounting firms asking, how do I get advisory going in a systematic process? Every firm I talk to tells me they do business advisory, but often it's piecemeal. Often it's when some third party has introduced that concept. It's not systematic, it's not process driven, and more importantly, it's not divisionalized. So what I wanted to talk about today was getting the right structure and process. Not so much how do we deliver advisory, but how do you get everything organized to the point that you can go to market? And I think that's a really critical thing. With that much interest in the advisory process, setting the right business structure, the right infrastructure, the right engagement process, and certainly the right delivery process becomes even more critical than ever before. And like everything in the accounting game, we are good at following systems and processes and checklists and tools and resources. So how do we get that framework in place? Every firm I go to has business advisory somewhere in their marketing, be it on their window, their banners, their websites. But when I actually dig down deep into the firm and talk to them about, well, what do you offer? How do you explain this to a client? How do you package it for a client in order to get upfront monthly billing? And even something more simple, how do you price it? Be it one-off or be it a regular basis. That's the stuff that isn't considered well enough. Sure, we do it. Sure, when an issue comes through the door, we react to it and we make it happen. We look after clients. We're very good at that. But I'm not talking about that today. I'm talking about getting the systems so that this becomes as process-driven as your compliance component of the business. Because every firm that I've met and mine in the past has done a great job in getting systems, processes and people resources right for compliance. So it does become the perfect annuity business. And within that business, the right people at the right task at the right rate do the right job. And it's also very scalable to the point that if someone isn't there, somebody else can jump in and get the job done and increase the level of client satisfaction. If that doesn't happen in advisory, believe me, it becomes too laissez-faire. And then all of a sudden, we're spending too much time with the wrong people and it's not a profitable engagement. And that makes no sense at all. Every firm tells me they want to make more money. They want to work less hours and they want to have more fun doing it. And most people in our industry talk to the fact that compliance, whilst profitable, whilst valuable, whilst needed, is not how they want to future-proof their firm. They want to future-proof their firm with more diversification of income, with a variety of different services that add to compliance but create more value. And accordingly, they want to bill it on value, not on time. I mean, geez, we've been talking about this forever and a day, have we not? But that challenge you see there is still the biggest thing, because with compliance, it takes a lot of time. It sure as hell makes money. But my question to you is, with everything that's happening in our game, with automation, new technology, government intervention, and who knows what else comes, can we make the same amount of compliance dollars doing exactly the same thing in 3 to 5 to 10 years? And if not, what do we need to do about it now to start the future-proofing of our firm? With that in mind, what I'm talking about today is how do I create annuity advisory services as distinct from one-off or piecemeal advisory services? If a client walks in and needs a budget and cash flow, just for example, now I know every firm online today would do it well and would bill it. There's no doubt about that. But then how many firms then turn it into quarterly board of advice meetings where you hold the client accountable to the budget as an action plan and the cash flow as an action plan? And you as the external chairperson to that client then manage their performance and report their performance and coach and develop them as they move forward trying to achieve that budget, that cash flow, or more importantly, that action plan. There's too much piecemeal stuff and not enough annuity income coming through advisory. But as distinct in compliance, we don't do one tax return, do we, guys? We do the same thing every year. It's the perfect annuity model. We've got to look at developing that within firms. So what's the current environment out there? Well, I'll tell you what currently happens. I've spoken to a lot of firms. We do advisory services often when asked by a client or a third party. And let's be honest, banks are generating this income for us. Banks are getting harder to work with, more demanding, require more info, and getting finance for clients is tougher than it's ever been. So they will continue to push back clients to us with things like budgets, cash flows, 3x3s, etc. The question is, how do we turn that into a valuable proposition for us as well as satisfying the client need to get funds? The first thing we need to do from a structural point of view is track advisory separately on your firm P&L. And with that, you need to have budgets, you need to have KPIs, you need to have accountability, and you need to have someone driving that accountability within your firm or an external person to help you outside of your firm. We've got to start to promote it proactively. We've got to start to market not what advisory is, but how it benefits you, how it wraps around the client's business, how it suits their industry, how it enables them to create greater wealth, both personally and in their business. It's often linked to compliance, and that does my head in, it really does. I can't understand why we link an innovative, you know, income generational service with something that is a begrudged, painful purchase that has to be done. By all means, package it with compliance, but don't sell it with compliance. We've got to think about how we communicate. It's often looking backwards. Compliance is looking backwards, advisory is looking forward. You can't just keep putting historical data in dashboards in front of clients and have conversations about what they did yesterday and what they should have or shouldn't done of yesterday and how much money they would have had yesterday or what would happen yesterday if they collected their debtors or put their prices up by a small amount. Sure, they can learn from that, but they've got to look at what I change in the future. I cannot do advisory with a client without a budget and a cash flow, without a future plan. And we've got to get that and build that into our systems. The industry at the moment gives it away for very little or nothing. And that again, does my head in. Every part of my DNA is saying, why are we doing this for nothing? It's valuable. It's educational. It's beneficial. It's value added. You can't have a value added service that you bill nothing for. And there's a lot of concern in the industry about how much will I bill? How much will the client pay? Well, I tell you what, if you don't bill anything, you'll never be able to measure anything either. Okay? Work out what you need to charge. Work out what's valuable. Go to market and give it a go. Let the client tell you it's too expensive. Stop worrying on what they'll say before you even get to them. And because we give it away for nothing, because we link it with compliance, because we're looking backwards, they really don't see the value in the service and they think it's part of compliance. And if they're thinking it's part of compliance, guys, the next thing I'd be thinking is, why am I paying you more for it? I'm already paying you for it as it goes. Isn't this part of the process? Mindset is critical. How we sell this is critical. How we communicate it is critical. And that comes back to good systems, processes, and people. So why is this happening? Look, we're talking about new technology, automation. We're talking about big data, artificial intelligence, you know, the Internet of Things, blockchain. God, there's something every week, isn't it? I get an email every week telling me compliance is dead. Well, I tell you what, for something that's dead, it seems to be breathing pretty well. I don't believe that for a minute. I do believe that generating income the way we're currently doing it will change in the future. And we have to look for diversification opportunities and set the process now. but it's not going to die. Please stop scaring with that stuff. So there's no immediate desire to change. I mean, compliance is profitable. Why change something that isn't broken at the moment? There's a lack of strategic direction in firms. The wrong people are doing the wrong jobs. That's the key thing with advisory. Too many firms take people that are good at compliance and put them into advisory. If they're good at compliance, leave them there. If they're happy, leave them there. To be a good advisory accountant, you've got to be a good storyteller. You've got to get the right people in the right jobs. You cannot squash a square peg into a round hole. And it makes no sense to try. If there's core inefficiencies in the compliance model, gee, it's hard to do advisory. So if your turnaround time is too long, if the number of open jobs are too many, your debtors are high, your WIP is high, and your productivity is not up to industry standards, then I'd be fixing that before I worry too much about doing advisory. But I wouldn't do it before I did advisory. I'd focus on getting it done and just starting slowly in the other diversified income space. Too many firms say, I won't get to it till I fix this. You know, they never fix it, which means they never get to it. Key person dependency. I'm seeing too many partners at too high a rate, or seniors or intermediates doing too low a job in the advisory space, but that never happens in the compliance space. Systems, process, people. We need to improve measurement and accountability, and we need to have no confusion as to what the business advice product is, how you communicate it to a client, how you sell it, and how you negotiate pricing for it. So how do we address this? If that's the problem, how do we address it? Well, at Smith Inc., my attitude has always been, when I offer advisory services, I'm looking to do strategic advisory as distinct from transactional advisory. Hey, don't get me wrong, I'll do transactional advisory when the time's right. But when I'm sitting there with a client, I'm talking to them about, where are you today? Where do you want to be in the future? How are we going to get there? Who's going to do it? When's it going to be done? When can we celebrate success? If there's no strategic vision, simply putting data into a dashboard, putting the dashboard in front of the client, or generating reports does not cut the dice. I've got no doubt you can put a smart-looking dashboard in front of a client and they will love it on day one. Whether they understand it or not is another story, but they will love it because it's different. Difference sells. The question is, will they love it as much on day two, three, and four? Will they still be with you on day three and four if all we do is put the same stuff historically into smart-looking dashboards and other technology solutions and try to use that to sell advisory? Surely that supports the selling process, but strategy sells advisory. That's the best tip I can give you. And it's also something we did pretty poorly in the early days. So at Smith Inc., we have a process called the Enabler process. Some of you might have seen it, but let me just run through it very quickly. It's a seven-step process to storytelling. You know, I'm a storyteller. Every story starts with once upon a time and finishes with happily ever after. The only issue is what's in the middle. There's no substance in the middle. Generally, nobody's happily ever after. So the first thing we need to do is prepare the firm for success. That is the primary step in the process before you worry about steps 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. In fact, 5, 6, and 7 are post-sales strategies. If you don't get one right, doing 2, 3, and 4 is possible, but then turning it into long-term advisory business is a massive challenge. Step 2 is unlock their needs. Get inside their head, understand what they want. Step 3 is to disturb them. Some clients are already disturbed. I know I've got them as well. It comes with the territory. They're already disturbed. But what we're going to do is show them something they want, measure how far they're away from it, establish a gap, and work with them to fill a gap. In my mind, all advisory services is gap filling. The only problem is you've got to define what the gap is in the first place because they don't know. Analyze, that's what every accountant loves. Give me Excel, give me the accountant's love tool. Let me put it in the dashboards. Let me generate reports. Let me get excited. I love that stuff. I get hot and sweaty when I look at it. I just have an awful lot of trouble selling it on an ongoing basis if there's no strategy behind it. It's a critical part of the process, but that's why it's number 4 and not number 1. The mistake we made in our firm in the early days was number 4 was number 1. We never prepared our firm. We just went in there with a tool that many would know called MYOB Profit Optimizer. Put it in front of a client, they all loved it because it was different, but it wasn't as good the second time. When we sat down after 3 years and thought, what are we doing here? Do we have a plan? Do we have a strategy? Do we have resources? Do we have systems and processes? The answer was no. What we had was a great bit of software that turned numbers to knowledge. And whilst that helped, it didn't create longevity. So we had to go back to step one, and we have to recognize what our problems were. And the three that you see on screen were the three that we struggled in. We struggled with time, just like every other accountant online today that struggles with time. But really, it wasn't time. It was lack of two things. It was lack of commitment to change and lack of capacity to do. The two C's, in my opinion. That's what kills accounting firms doing advisory, because they've never structurally addressed the fact that they haven't got enough time because they're not committed enough to change their model and the capacity that those people have in their firm, let alone individually, isn't sufficient to do additional things. That has to change. The other thing we did poorly in the early days is we picked the wrong clients to start with. You know, we segmented our clients like most accounting firms do in the old A, B, C's and D's. And we recognised that the A-class clients were great because they wanted to grow. They were great payers, never had to chase them. They listened. They were a great source of additional revenue. They didn't BMW, which is bitch, moan, whinge, okay? They seeked advice and they were looking for a partnership with us for success, the absolute ideal client, yet the wrong client to start with, in my mind, in advisory. I'm looking more for the B, the one that might be missing an A-class behavior, and if we can work on addressing that issue, we could possibly turn them into an A. Maybe they're the client that's always been paying your bill on time, but for the last 12 months they haven't. And the reason they haven't is because other clients aren't paying them. And they're caught in the middle of that awfully nasty cash flow cycle. Their debtors' days have escalated. They haven't looked at their pricing points, but they're hitting the business with a lot of volume. Their inventory is turning over slow, or their WIP is not getting out the door quick enough, but they're paying their creditors too quick. We all know the symptoms, guys, but I'm looking for clients that have that little bit of desperation about what's happening in their business. I'm not looking for the old C's that have many A-class behaviours, and I'm sure as hell not going through the D's, which are totally opposite of A's. I say to a lot of accounting firms, how'd you get the D's? And many of them say, yeah, we still got them. We inherited them. I said, well, you don't have to accept an inheritance, surely. But many people tell me, well, they're the relatives, they're the referrals of the A's and B's. That's their family, their friends. And they're not really A-class, they're not really D-class, they're more Z-minus class. You know what happens then? They love you. Then they refer you to all their other mates, and all of a sudden you've created an environment of emotional vampires, people that will, you know, look to suck the blood every day but never pay for the privilege. We can't do that. They suck capacity out of your business, okay? They take any opportunity for advisory out the door because we're spending too much time on the low-yield clients. We've got to be able to look for the right one to start with. In my mind, the right client has three characteristics. One, they're leaking cash flow. Two, some issue in their business like debtors, price, volume, cost, inventory, WIP has gone the wrong way over the last 12 months or so. And three, they generally want to improve their business and see us as a partner in the process. So in essence, I'm looking for attitude, attitude, attitude. Not size of business, revenue, type of industry. I tried that and it didn't work real well. We've got to look for the people who generally want to grow and see us as part of that process. But we've also got to address at step one other things like, do I have a proven implementation system? What processes, what systems, what structures, what people do I need to put in place? We've also got to build confidence in those people to be able to do what we need them to do when we need them to do it. It doesn't just come naturally for many, okay? In fact, in some regards, we spend too much time waiting to be confident and then we fail to implement. There's got to be a desire to move from a comfort zone. Compliance is comfortable. You know, what we do every day is comfortable. Advisory, to a certain extent, is uncomfortable. But in that uncomfortable state is also a massive opportunity. We've got to get the right staff and a practice champion, and that probably isn't going to be the partner. You know, their role is to grow the firm, their role is to engage clients, their role is to hunt. What we need under them is the right person, the right people, the right team to be able to take those opportunities and turn those opportunities into product and service. And that takes training, that takes development of key staff. I see too many accounting firms spend too little money on training advisory services, but they spend a lot of money training tax. And by advisory training, I mean how to ask the right questions, how to engage clients, how to close an opportunity, how to provide quality customer service, how to deal with client objections, how to deal with difficult clientele, more soft skills training than technical training. That's what's required for advisory success. And wrap it all up into the final dot point, we need a proven implementation plan. We need a plan that we can develop that you can stick to, you can hold yourself accountable to, the firm can hold the champion accountable to, with KPIs, with budgets, with measurables, with actions, with timelines. And then from that perspective, let's look at executing the plan. The plan gives us strategic direction for the firm. The key thing then is implementing that plan and achieving the strategic goals. So a few challenges there. So what do I think are the four key steps here? One, I'm all about implementing the structured trusted advisor model into the firm, and I'll talk to you about what that is in one moment. Two, we've got to develop the right infrastructure. We've got to work out who will do what, when, and how. What services will you offer? What price will you put on them? How will you package them? How do you explain it to a client in a beneficial manner that encourages them to want to sign up for this, not have to, want? It's very difficult providing a want-based service than to a have-to-based service. We've got to get all our ducks in a row. And number two comes back to the plan. Number one comes back to changing the structure in your firm to create commitment and capacity. Number three, we need an engagement model and offer for the client. No engagement model, no offer, no signature on the proposal, no need to worry about step four, which is developing delivery models that are client-centered, at least from the client's perspective, that this relates to you, your business, your industry, your goals, your expectations, your visions. They're the four major steps in my mind, guys, that we have to get in play to make this work on an ongoing basis. And the most important one is developing what I call the trusted advisor model. I'm all about pipelines. Do you have a pipeline in your firm for suspects, prospects, and clients? And where is that stored? To make advisory work, we need a CRM. We need a client relationship management system. That might or might not be your practice management system, depending on what you're using and whether it truly will manage client relationships. Because the relationships you will create here are much more diversified, much more involved, and much more irregular than what you currently do with compliance, as in annual tax returns, quarterly BAS statements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I want all these people to do, predominantly this person here, the client, is to come through the trusted advisor office where me and my team act as the project manager. We diagnose what's important to them. We diagnose what they need, where they want to be in the future, not just with their business life, but their personal life. We look at their wealth position. We look at absolutely developing, enhancing, and protecting their wealth position individually and their business. And in order to deliver the services that we are project managing here, we might need to draw on external advisors to do certain tasks. That's above the line. But below the line, internally, we will provide a whole host of other services as part of the project management process through the trusted advisor model, like tax and compliance, consulting, self-managed super, FP. Well, FP for some firms is external. With some firms, it would be up here above the line. Succession, estate planning, bookkeeping. well, maybe the estate plan is developed by the legal service above the line, but nurtured, developed and put together by you below the line, bookkeeping services. And over the time in a firm, as I've seen with my firm in the past, some of these things like IT might be below the line, FP might be below the line, but then all of a sudden we might make a decision to put it above the line. But the part of the trusted advisor model, guys, screen just jumped on me, sorry about that. Part of the trusted advisor model is, as the project manager, if the client needs an estate plan, I'm going to meet, or my team will meet, with the external advisor, with the client, and we will understand exactly what's going to be done, who's going to do it, when's it going to be done, and how much it's going to cost. And we will revert back to the CRM and the trusted advisor office and put in all those actions, outcomes, projects, and other key deliverables to make sure nothing slips through the cracks. When you're dealing with a farmer or a jeweler or a legal firm or a builder or a cafe, they're very, very diversified businesses. Sure, we can provide compliance services where one model just about fits all. Advisory is different. There's too many moving parts not to have good internal controls and good administration people doing this and managing it. The first thing I say to every firm when I talk to them is, do you have a CRM, yes or no? Who is the best person to live, eat and breathe it? And that's an admin person, not a professional person. So the professional accounting staff will be involved, but not at that level. We need someone that can reliably manage everything that goes on and make sure nothing slips through the cracks. Because the moment something slips through the cracks, it is service failure. And then the challenge is being able to control that so the client doesn't get a negative impact. And that's a challenge. It all comes back to systems, processes, and people. So as we move into Christmas and we look at 2020, I think we all have a challenge. Number one is we should take the industry challenge and grow the size of practice revenue without increasing the percentage of compliance work. And more importantly, I think we should have a lot more fun doing it. I really do. Advisory is fun. It's a wonderful journey taking a client and developing themselves and their businesses and creating greater wealth and measuring that wealth and making you the trusted advisor as you work through that process. It sounds very simple, but it does require systems, processes, and resources. And if nothing else, guys, as I come to a conclusion, what it requires is a business advisory implementation plan. And if anyone on the line today wants to talk about it, I'm willing to have a chat to anyone and work through what I see just on through teleconference, totally complimentary, about where your firm is, where it needs to be, and what we need to do to start to put together the process to get a plan in place that you can hold yourself accountable to and start to deliver this on an ongoing basis. And with those sentiments in place, I'm going to throw back to Andrea, but before I do, just in case I forget, I wanted to wish everyone a very, very happy and successful Christmas and a wonderful 2020. It's been a pleasure being with you this year, and I look forward to another year in the future of webinars and working with accounting firms. Thanks, Andrea. Over to you.
Thanks, Mark. Great presentation. Getting ready for 2020. I can't believe we're nearly there. In the meantime...
It's a shocker.
Okay. We'll update it for 2020. There we go. First challenge accepted. if anybody would like to ask Mark a question, just please type it in to the Ask a Question function, and I'll read that out for you. I'll just give it a couple of moments and let you know that our 2020 webinar schedule is now finalised. It's all online as of this afternoon. I'll send out a link when I send you out the recording this afternoon, and you can register and have a look at what we've got happening for the webinars for 2020. No questions coming through at this point, Mark. Of course, you can contact us directly. Just go to our website in the contact form, or you've probably got Mark and I have our email addresses. Looks like you've covered everything, Mark. No questions. Very good.
Sounds good, Andrea.
That's great. Thanks so much for attending, everybody. Have a great Christmas and New Year, and we look forward to seeing you all again in 2020.